Margo, where we get to work and answer the questions that are keeping you stuck in life. Each time we meet, I introduce some different aspect of myself so you don't have to hear me on repeat as to why I'm here answering your questions. I began my life in interior design, actually, but that might be a topic for another day. Then I moved into food, which I have always loved. So today I thought I'd talk about cooking, just for fun, as I've written a cookbook, been a caterer, set up a deli food store, set up a fine dining kitchen and menu that in that establishment, cooked overseas and done quite a bit of entertaining. My particular area of interest is how to cook great food with just five ingredients. I call it Take Five and Cook, and I have hundreds of recipes in my files for cooking on a shoestring, making heritage puddings, what I call do or diet recipes, and lots that translate from family fare to dinner parties. In my humble opinion, I'm the world expert on cooking with five ingredients. In my cookbook, I include tips and hints for how to be a great host and a great guest. I thought I could read you some today about being a guest, because it's amazing the number of people who say to me, "Oh, I felt you wrote that just for me." I do have a thing about etiquette. It's one of my hobby horses, as my children know only too well. So there are 20 in my book, these tips, but today we'll just do 10, and maybe we'll do the rest another day. And perhaps we'll cover the how-to for hosts as well another time. So you could send in your foodie questions too, if you like. So these are no-nos for dinner party guests. Number one, never begin eating before the host, unless you're invited to. So you wait till everybody's there and everybody's served. Never speak with food in your mouth, because it's unspeakably gross. Don't do it. Don't do it now. Not ever. Never. Never ignore the host's wishes. Whether you're asked to begin eating, asked not to help clear the table, or not to do the dishes, you must respect their instructions on that. Number four, never declare your food preferences or allergies at a dinner party. Tell the host beforehand, or be quiet and just play with your food if you simply can't eat it. Number five, never say anything that may resemble criticism of the food at the table, even jokingly, and no matter how constructively you feel you may be saying it. Don't even agree if the host wails about something dry or burnt or past its best. Think creatively, dig deep, and find a positive comment. Any cook will really already know when they have missed getting it right. You could even help by delicately changing the subject. Number six, try not to interrupt excessively. Imagine you are using an Indian talking stick and let the person speaking finish before you have your say. Number seven, never use worse language than the host. There's nothing worse than somebody who can't read the room and is in full flight with their very fruitiest language and doesn't realise that it's not a fit for that particular company. Number eight, never wing it with what cutlery you decide to use. Work from the outside in, or when in doubt, follow the host's lead or whoever else you know is there who will know what to do. Number nine, never leave the table without excusing yourself, at least to your neighbour. Number 10, offer to help by all means, but never take over any role, seating people, pouring wine, dominating generally, unless you have the host's approval. I thought I'd finish on number 11, actually. Never start an argument unless you're encouraged to by the host, of course. So that can be quite fun, but you have to know how to manage that kind of thing. So that's me. Now, let's get on to today's first question. It's from Pia, and she says, "I read books and I listen to podcasts about self-growth, and there's so much out there, so many ideas, it's overwhelming. Can you help simplify that so I'm not just consuming endless information and not really knowing where to start to know how to make it all work for me?" Well, I know exactly what you mean, Pia. I've read lots of books and listened to many voices. How do you pick the one that's right? when there are so many ways to get from A to B. Lots of things can work. Some are more hard work than others. Some are a bit convoluted in the path to get there. Some are just pretty words, all air bubbles that don't really have any substance. Everything should have a point and a purpose. So I personally don't do things that don't fit with my overall agenda or align with my beliefs, or that I think aren't really effective. If I'm looking for something, I go to the people I know and trust. I follow a few people who inspire me and who I respect and who I know have an important message. That's not to say new voices don't have that. They absolutely can. And it's very hard to carve a space in a world that's dominated with really the shiniest, biggest voices. I find YouTube is a good place to start to listen to people to see what they're about. Self-growth is a broad term, and it covers a multitude of things, from daily habits to learning new skills, so it's hard for me to recommend which way you should go. I can say that the book that got me started in all of this is called The Success Principles by Jack Canfield. He was the man who co-wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Though I haven't looked at it for years, it is really fantastic and very easy to consume. It's kind of in little chapters. I gave it to one of my children and they loved it. So it's good for any adult or young person. I'd start there. Also, many writers have recommended reading material at the back of their books, so they'll suggest other authors they know to be good. If you're not a reader, then listen to these people talking or presenting, Audible or podcasts or YouTube. I often scan through YouTube when I find somebody interesting just to see what they've got to say on various subjects. Come back to me if you want to focus on a particular area, but start with Jack Canfield and the Success Principles. I just want to tell you about one thing that he said in that book that really stuck in my mind. I often think of it. It is what he calls a green light. So it's that thing between go and stop where you can check yourself. So it's like tuning into your inner knowing, I guess, where you feel a check about something or not sure about something. That means stop and think about it. Don't charge ahead, but take a moment to assess that thing. So check that book out. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for your question, Pierre. Our next question is from Edward. He says, I don't understand why I can't seem to get change to stick in my life. Everybody has doubts, don't they? No one is fully sure of themselves. I want to make progress, but there's always an underlying thought that I'm not quite good enough or worth what I want. I can't seem to make the progress I want because of this persistent, niggling doubt. Who am I to think I can do or have what I want? I'd like to get beyond this sort of barrier, but how? Thank you for your question, Edward. There is a wonderful writer, gone to heaven now, called Louise Hay. She identified that self-love was the thing we need most in life, and that lack of it is at the root of all our issues. Marissa Peer, who's the founder of RTT, that's the amazingly effective therapy I use, she identifies it as our needing to feel we are enough. Knowing you're enough is fundamental. My particular terminology is to say seeing who we really are. Lid off, constraints off, boundaries burst through, limitless. Even when I say those words, I can feel this kind of rising feeling in me. Truly expansive and really positive. I'd like to see the whole world scooped up into the realization of the potential of who they are. That's who you are, Jack. Don't let anyone, especially you, tell you anything different. You were born into this world as an amazing, perfect human being, here to dance and play in this life. I know it doesn't always feel like that, but we must always hold that thought. You are enough. You are lovable. You are capable. You are amazing. Whatever you look at, if it's something you want to do or have, be in a great relationship, a better job, whatever it is, you must begin by telling yourself you're worth it. You're enough. You really are a spectacular human being, and life is here to serve you. sometimes my little group, we sort of joke with each other and we'll say, well, of course, I am the centre of the universe. It all spins around me. Now, that may sound preposterous, but it helps to put your focus on your value, which is inestimable. Off you go now, Edward, and you tell yourself that the universe revolves around you. It'll make you smile and it'll help you to see your value, and it will shore up your confidence. Therapist hat on, there may be an underlying block in your subconscious that's running a program behind the scenes and telling you that you're less than you are. That may need to be addressed to set you free. You can always contact me if you want to know more. Now, our third question today. And this one is about developing coping mechanisms. Penny says, sometimes I feel overwhelmed and breathless, slightly panicky, and I don't feel like I can cope. I need a way to manage myself so I don't feel out of control. Can you help? I must say, Penny, that I love the fact you haven't labelled yourself with a condition. Often people say, I suffer from. Ooh, I want to stop that. Don't ever identify yourself with suffering. Don't say, I suffer from anything. I'd like to speak strongly to the person who first started that sort of talk. Step one, never identify as a sufferer of anything. That makes you subject to something outside your control. It sets you up to be a victim of it. To me, it's like putting on a great big, dark, heavy old man's overcoat and trying to walk around as though it's not weighing you down. Fling it off. Just do this little exercise in your mind with me. Close your eyes, except if you're driving, and imagine you're in a shop and you need a coat. You pick up one that looks like it came from the beginning of the century. It's musty, old, heavy, sort of damp. It's shapeless and dark. You put it on. You see how it restricts you and you can feel the weight of it. It doesn't look good, it doesn't feel good, it doesn't smell nice. Now shrug it off. Walk to the next rack and pick up a coat that's beautiful, lightweight, toasty warm, in a happy colour that you love. It feels soft. It smells lovely. You put it on. It fits like it was made for you. It makes you smile. It's incredibly expensive, but that's nothing to you and you buy it immediately. I just put that bit in for fun. But do you see where I'm going with this? We wear our beliefs like an overcoat. They become our look. We carry the weight of our beliefs. The next time you feel wobbly, Penny, you must say to yourself, I don't wear that coat anymore. My coat is light and it's made for me. One of the rules of your mind is that it's ruled by the pictures you make in your head and the stories you tell yourself. This is just a little bit of a useful imagery, I think, to remind you that you're in the choosing seat of your life. So you must choose your coat intentionally. Now for some practical suggestions. Breathing. Deep, measured breathing will help you to center and stabilize yourself. If you must leave the scene of the crime and you feel you need to, pop into a little private room, sometimes called a loo, and just take a moment. Switch to focusing on slow, steady, deep breaths while you say encouraging things to yourself, such as, I have incredible coping skills. I am completely at ease with myself and the world. I'm calm, cool, and collected. I always know what to say and do at just the right time. Shut down any challenging thoughts and replace them with these ones. You choose the labels for you. It doesn't matter if they are true in that moment. You are on the path to making them true. You do have incredible coping skills. Chill is your middle name. The second part of breathing that I always suggest is that on the out-breath, you send out all you do not want. Out with panicky thoughts, worry, whatever it is. And in, on that lovely in-breath, you take all you want. Breathe in your sense of calm, your reassurance about who you really are, your personal mojo, your uniqueness. Try that. You'll see it works, and you will take back control, firstly of your mind, because that's where it all starts. Then your state will follow, and then your situation. Really, the only work we have to do is in our minds. We must constantly manage and choose our thoughts. For our whole lives, it's not a short-term thing, it's forever. Our thoughts solidify into words. Our words create our actions, and our actions become us, how we show up in life. Start with managing your thoughts, and you will take control of your life. Best wishes, Penny. Let me know how you go. Number 4. How do you find your life purpose? Stephen. Ooh, that was short and sweet. Our last question for the day, and one that's talked about quite a bit. Maybe you know the answer to this question for you. Maybe you haven't thought of it. What is your life purpose? Maybe you don't feel you have or need one. Maybe it's just to look after your beautiful family. Well, that's a worthy one indeed. But you may also want to make a living from your life purpose. You may want to make it your job. Let's have a look at this more closely. Let's see if we can come up with a way that will clarify this for you, Stephen. Sometimes when I meet people, I avoid asking them what they do, as many an accountant would like to be an artist or a chef, and quite possibly many a chef wishes he was an accountant, as there may be a better living in money than there is in food. But I digress. Instead of asking them what they do, I like to say to people, what's your forte? So if they are an accountant, but they like to knit, they can say, well, my forte is actually knitting beanies for accountants. See what I mean? It gives people the chance to say what they love. So what do you love to do, Stephen? Where is your heart and passion? You might like to help people grow vegetables in their backyard because that gives you deep joy. Ask yourself what you love to do so much that you would do it for free. I'm doing this for free today. What would you do if you didn't need to charge for it? Also, ask yourself what other people seek your help or advice around. Cooking, dog training, accounting, the accountants have the day. Chances are that the thing that lights you up also aligns with your core values. You want to make the world a better place and take care of the planet by showing people how to create vegetable gardens in their backyard. Do you see what I mean? A worthy life purpose. I'm a mad keen proponent of people loving what they do. Working is going to suck up your life. So please do what you love. The trick is, of course, making a buck at that, or at least a living, from doing this thing that you've found you enjoy and are so good at. I wish to modestly say that I'm quite good at thinking of how to monetize an idea. So when you have your idea formed, the thing you have to spend your time doing, you must write back, Stephen, and we'll explore how you can make money doing that thing you love. And if you're not Stephen, you can write him with what you love and ask how to make your life purpose cover your costs and some. All sounds quite exciting. I hope we'll hear from some of you. And I hope that helps you to narrow in, Stephen, on what you really want from your life. All questions can go to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz, or you can write to me at margounlimited.com. I've been developing a quiz, actually, which I've called the All of You quiz. And it covers various aspects of your life, so you can see where your strengths are and where you might like to focus on some more input or upgrading. It's free on my website, Margot Unlimited, so have a look if you feel in the mood. That was our last question for the day, and now we are at the part of the program that we hand over to the universe to hear what the power of all that is has to say to us today. I picked this one from my collection because it felt right. If you have a really sticky question, one that you think only God could answer, send it in and we'll ask him. Thank you for joining me at Margo Unlimited and at Ask Margo today. Here's our word for the day. You must stop seeing yourself as a person without, even though that is how it appears sometimes. You must see and feel yourself to be a person with, because that is what you are, a person with all that you desire. You must understand that all you wish for is yours in the unseen, the moment you ask. This is not an impossible ask. It is a possible ask. You can hold that space for yourself. Then you will emanate at the frequency of your desire. Then you will draw what you desire to yourself, and you will be irresistible. Thank you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.